The following presentation was recorded before a live audience during the 2013 Health and Wellness Seminar held in Bay Roberts, Newfoundland. Our presenter was Dr. Tim Riesenberger, and the title of this first presentation was The Secret to Reversing 95% of Diabetes. It is our hope that you will be informed, encouraged, and inspired as you listen to this presentation.
Diabetes. Certainly something that causes a lot of fear to many of us. Not just something that will shorten life, but decrease the quality of it. We'll start off with kind of what you know about diabetes, and that's changing even in terms of the names, the definitions. Perhaps some of you are associated with a diabetes that occurs when you're young, right? What would that be? Juvenile onset. That's what they used to call it. But you know, we don't call it that anymore. We are leaving it at type 1 and type 2 because we used to say juvenile or adult onset. But that has now gone away. And the reason for that can be illustrated in a story. As Pastor Williams mentioned, I'm an emergency room physician, and not everyone who comes in is life-threatening, or at least doesn't appear so by their chief complaint. I had a chart of a 6-year-old girl. Ear pain was the complaint. I see a lot of ear infections, so you know, I didn't expect this to be anything different. But when I walked into the room, I realized that this was more than ear pain. In fact, just walking in the room, I knew that this young girl had diabetes, even though it was not on the chart. Yes, sometimes you can smell the ketones, that's true. But in this case, something else tipped me off. In fact, as soon as I walked in, as the tech was walking out, he had just finished taking her vital signs, I said, "Get me a finger stick glucose." He's like, "Now?" I'm like, "Yeah, now." And so, of course, I did the exam and everything like that. And ear pain is typically straightforward. But if you have diabetes, your immune system is suppressed. And a simple otitis media could turn into otitis, a malignant otitis externa. That means just a very bad ear infection that goes from the outside and can actually go all the way into your central nervous system or your brain. It can be life-threatening. When I got the results back, it was absolutely certain that she already had diabetes. And the reason I knew when I walked in the room is because this 6-year-old weighed almost 95 kilos. She had type 2 diabetes. There are more and more young people even in their teens or younger, getting the adult onset diabetes or the type 2 diabetes. And that is by far the vast majority of diabetes. Type 2 diabetes makes up over 95% of all diabetes, but certainly it isn't the only type. The type 1 is a little different mechanism. In the type 1 diabetes, the body itself, the immune system, attacks the pancreas and destroys the beta cells in the islets of Langerhans, which are the insulin-producing cells. And so the type 1 diabetics, they have very little or no insulin. The type 2 diabetics are a little bit different. We're going to be talking about them later. Are there any other forms of diabetes people that are familiar with? Yes, absolutely. Gestational diabetes affects up to 5% of all pregnancies. And is that a big deal? What's the problem with that? Well, you're exactly right. You have a risk that if you have gestational diabetes, once you deliver, there is a very high risk that you will be diagnosed with diabetes on a permanent basis. What do they treat that with? Anyone know? Gestational diabetes? They use insulin, right? And how does that affect the baby? Anyone know? Yes, it is a big, big influencer on the pregnancy. In fact, a lot of these pregnancies have to go to C-section because the baby is just 10 kilos, 7 to 8 kilos, just too large. And why do you suppose the baby gets so big. Yeah, someone said insulin. And insulin is what type of hormone? It's a growth hormone. It's probably one of the most powerful growth hormones known to man. In fact, people that are bodybuilders abuse insulin because you will gain massive amounts of weight on the insulin. And that is true not just when you're older, but even when you're younger. The baby is exposed to that insulin as well as the mother, and that baby grows like there's no tomorrow. And of course, if the child grows too big, it's going to have trouble coming out. So that's why they have to do C-section. There are many other forms of diabetes. I think you guys have already mentioned the three main types, but there's Bronze diabetes, there's central diabetes. You can get it from a head injury, is diabetes insipidus, a kidney problem. And so there's all kinds of diabetes, but the vast majority of diabetes is the type 2 or the insulin resistance type of diabetes. Specifically, Newfoundland has a big problem with diabetes. Almost 10% of you have diabetes. And we have found out that the reason for that is there's an extremely high rate of obesity here, as well as physical inactivity. This costs Canada almost $250 million just for this province alone. In my country, the CDC has just come out with a very frightening statistic. The CDC is the Centers for Disease Control. That's kind of the epidemiological arm of our government in the United States. And they have just come out with the fact that every child that is born after the year 2000, so someone who's younger than Derek over there, who's manning our health age analysis, those children, one out of every three will die of complications of diabetes. If they are minority, meaning Hispanic or African American, one out of two will die of complications of diabetes. And why is that? Well, we're going to find out. Diagnosis. What sort of things do people complain of when they have diabetes, or what sort of manifestations will they have that might tip you off to diabetes? Yeah, they can be very thirsty. And that's typically more type 1 diabetes, where someone has a high level of blood glucose fairly suddenly, and then the body, in its effort to lower it, starts spilling the glucose in the urine. And as many of you know, in general chemistry, where you have sugar, what follows it? Water, right? So you're going to be peeing all the time and, of course, dehydrating yourself, so you're thirsty, right? Anything else? The what? Yeah, you could be tired. That's true. But that's, you could be tired for lots of reasons. I mean, I'm tired from the 4.5-hour time difference between you guys in Seattle. So, but there's other things, too. Anything else specific to diabetes? You can lose weight, especially because that's more type 1 diabetes again. You're losing weight because you don't have the insulin, which allows the glucose to get into the cells. So, and you also can't burn your calories correctly. You're creating a lot of ketones. There's a lot of reasons you would lose weight. But that's more type 1. A lot of people, they can tell when their sugar is off right away because their vision gets blurry. Anyone know why that is? Well, it's the same concept. Water follows sugar, and your lens is clear. Your lens is filled with fluid, filled with water, and the sugar gets into the lens, and then water will follow the sugar, and then your lens swells. So when your lens swells, it's not going to be able to accommodate properly because your papillary muscles in your eye are supposed to stretch it or relax it to allow it to change shape. And so when your sugar is off, it's swollen, and it can't change shape. So no matter what you do with your lenses or whatever, you're going to have blurry vision. So that's one thing. But there's another reason why diabetics get blurry vision. Does anyone know? Have you ever heard of diabetic retinopathy? We're going to talk about that a little bit more. There's other signs and symptoms, but typically our lab tests focus in on checking what? Glucose, yeah. And so what's the cutoff here in Canada for diabetes, like the fasting glucose. It's 6. So we have found that, at least in the United States, and I believe it's happening in Canada too, is that when you get your lab tests, it will start to flag results even at like in the 5s. It will flag those as abnormal, even though they're technically not quote-unquote diabetes. They're finding that these lower values are indicators of pre-diabetes. In fact, you may just have a sugar in the low 5s, but they've found that it indicates that you carry the gene on one side or both sides. If your fasting sugar runs on even the high normal side, you have the gene for diabetes. And so you need to be very, very aware. Also, they've found that even if you don't actually make the threshold for the actual 6 when you're fasting, you can still be diabetic. And what they need to do is they need to do what's called a glucose tolerance test or a hemoglobin A1C, which is just a measure of your blood's hemoglobin, which is the iron and the oxygen-containing molecule. What they find is that when your sugar is high over time, the glucose tends to stick to the hemoglobin molecule. And the hemoglobin A1C is a very simple test. It just measures the percent of hemoglobin molecules in your blood that have a glucose stuck to them. And it should be less than 5%. Now, if it starts to creep up beyond that, then there's a problem. You're not controlling your diabetes well. And you may have diabetes even though your sugar is good. In fact, a lot of people who have diabetes, they're really, really good like 2 or 3 days before their doctor's appointment, right? And then they get there and they're so happy when their blood sugar comes back normal, but then the hemoglobin A1C is abnormal because it actually measures an average of over about 30 days of what you've been doing. So you can't get away from us. We know what you're doing. The other thing that's very recent that's come out, this was just the 5th of this month, I received this. I get updates on these sort of phenomena as a physician. And they looked at, this was my country, they looked at a lot of the problems with diabetes in terms of undiagnosed problems. And 90% of the diabetics in the study had kidney damage already. That's one of the biggest organs that is affected. And the scary part is a lot of the symptoms of diabetes are not really strong symptoms. A lot of the damage occurs without even knowing it. Like you can have half to 75% of your kidney function gone and have no symptoms. Same thing with your liver. And sometimes the only warning that you have kidney failure is a lab test. I knew of a friend of mine, he was 29, and he didn't know he had any problems with his kidneys until the doctor said, you're going to go on dialysis next week. And he's like, what? He's like, your kidneys are gone. And so you may or may not have symptoms. You may feel thirsty. You may not. You may have the blurry vision. You may have numbness. You may have lost things. But you may have nothing. And that is where it behooves you to understand if you're at risk or not. I know I was talking with a couple ladies here, and they're very aware of their bodies. They monitor their health very carefully. And that's important because you don't want to wait until you have symptoms. Because sometimes if you wait, it can be too late. Anyone know what the number one cause of death for diabetics is? Anyone know? Yes, that's correct. Your risk of heart attack is 10 times higher if you have diabetes than if you do not. The vast majority of diabetics will die of heart disease, and that's very important because diabetics do not have the typical complaints of chest pain that the other person does because, of course, diabetes affects your nervous system, so you may not even feel the chest pain. I've had many people with diabetes come in, and they just complain of being tired. They had a full-blown heart attack. I had someone come in, they were just nauseous. It ended up being a full-blown heart attack. They may have no pain at all and still have a heart attack. And that's very important, especially if someone has diabetes. They don't want to ignore subtle symptoms. They want to get checked out frequently. Diabetes is also not only a cause of death, but it's a cause of disability. It's the number one cause of three different, I'd say, decreasers in quality of life. Anyone know what they are? Stroke, it is amputation, yeah, that's probably in there. I actually didn't put this on the list, but you're probably right. Peripheral vascular disease is probably up there with diabetes for amputations, but that's a very common cause of amputations. Anything else? Yes, blindness. In fact, there is some debate that macular degeneration is the number one cause of blindness, but I think diabetes is overtaking it, and that's because you get diabetic retinopathy. The high levels of blood sugar cause your body to create these weak, fragile blood vessels in the back of your eye. And the problem is that those bleed and scar. And you can't see through a scar, so you go blind. So it's very important if someone has any sort of visual complaints that they consider diabetes in their differential diagnosis, in their thought of what could be causing these visual problems. Many people with diabetes, they're not diagnosed until they already have advanced retinopathy because they don't really notice it. Sometimes the retinopathy is maybe near the periphery and they're not really noticing it in front of them. Any other number one cause for diabetes? Number one cause for retinopathy, that's true. Anything else? Well, we know it affects your kidneys, right? So it's actually a very, very serious cause of dialysis or kidney failure. Now, some people say that high blood pressure is the number one cause, but it's kind of debatable. Any other number ones you can think of for diabetes? Yes, neuropathy, and specifically nerves not only in your periphery, like the hands, the feet, but it's also the number one cause of erectile dysfunction. Now, that may not kill you, but is that certainly a decreaser of quality of life? Yes, it is. So it's a number one for a lot of things. And a lot of us say, well, you know, I don't have diabetes, so it's no big deal for me, right? Well, they've actually found that high levels of blood sugar suppresses your immune system. That's why a diabetic is in trouble when they get an infection. A simple infection like a cold or a flu or maybe a simple pneumonia may be something life-threatening for a diabetic because their immune system is weaker. In fact, they have found that eating refined sugar creates a syndrome in the body similar to diabetes for a time. Not forever. Like if you're normal, if you're healthy, your blood sugar is not going to stay high forever. The insulin will bring it down and you'll be normal again. But there is a little window of time when you eat a large load of refined sugar where your immune system is suppressed. Have you ever noticed that? If you eat a lot of sugary stuff, you tend to get sick a little bit easier. They found if you eat the equivalent of a banana split in one sitting, that you become an uncontrolled diabetic for a few hours. It's up to 5 hours. Now the problem is that we tend to eat a lot of refined sugar throughout the day, so we're constantly suppressing our immune system. Like just a can of pop, 12 teaspoons of sugar, can you imagine that? It's unbelievable. Could it be that even the normal person around there is a secret diabetic for periods of time? We were talking about this a little bit earlier. Even if someone is perfect, they follow their doctor's orders, they take all their medications, they do everything right, they still lose 10 years off their life. So obviously, we don't want you to lose those 10 years. We want you to have them, and we want you to have them filled with quality. Most people think and assume that the cause of diabetes is what? Sugar. They assume that. Is that true? Well, Dr. James Anderson from the University of Kentucky decided to try that, and he took a bunch of healthy volunteers and he fed them half a kilo of sugar for weeks, like over a month, to see if he could affect either their urinalysis, their hemoglobin A1Cs, their glucose tolerance tests. He wanted to see if he could induce diabetes in these young volunteers. They're actually about your age, Josh. And none of them had diabetes, even as they choked down half a kilo of sugar a day, white sugar. Then he mixed things up. He switched it around and took away the sugar And instead, he gave them a 60% fat diet. Now, to give you an idea, a typical rich Western diet is about 42 to 45%. So it's a little bit higher than that. And after putting them on a 60% fat diet, in 2 weeks, 100% of the subjects, every last one of them, had diabetes, according to the labs. Now, obviously, they weren't getting heart attacks and stuff like that, but he was able to mess up their metabolism to the point of inducing laboratory diabetes. Now, a lot of people ask me, and they say, well, how does that work? How is fat really the cause of diabetes? And here's how it works. When you have a cell, for those of you who are health professionals, any health professionals in the audience? So, a couple. So those of you who are health professionals, if you want to look this up, it's called the post-receptor defect model of insulin resistance for diabetes. So post-receptor defect. The cell has receptors for insulin. It has receptors for glucose. And it has receptors for potassium. So when you have, that's insulin. This is glucose. And this is potassium. So when the cell needs fuel, it will start putting out more of these insulin receptors. Insulin is like the key that opens the cell and allows the blood sugar and also potassium and other things too to come into the cell. However, when you put yourself on a high-fat diet and when your body begins to accumulate fat in the cells, so these are fat globules, when you begin to fill up the cell, there's no longer room, quote-unquote. It's not really that simple. It's fairly complex, but there's no longer room in the cell for any more glucose, so it starts to remove some of these receptors. So the cell becomes resistant to insulin. It has fewer receptors, but if some of you guys understand chemistry, it still might have, let's say, a couple back here or something like that. So if you want to force more glucose into the cell, what do you have to raise? Insulin. You have to raise the concentration of insulin, and that's exactly what the body does in type 2 diabetes. Did you know if you check someone's blood insulin, who's a type 2 diabetic, they have high levels of insulin? Isn't that interesting? Doesn't that seem almost counterintuitive? The reason why they have higher levels of insulin is that they are trying to overcome the insulin resistance at the cellular level. The cell is full of fat. It's like no room in the inn. So it's taking down the receptors. Now the problem is that you can only add so much more insulin. Your body can only produce so much more insulin. And after a while, when there's just fewer and fewer receptors, you can't keep up. Your body can simply not produce enough insulin to overcome the resistant, and that's when you need some help from a drug, right? A drug or actually insulin that's injected from outside of the body. So this is the model for insulin resistance, and this is what shows that fat and not sugar is the cause of diabetes. Now, of course, if you eat a lot of sugar, what is sugar going to be converted into? Fat. So ultimately, it's not good for you to eat a bunch of refined sugar. But I want to reiterate this because many, even health professionals, will say, oh, don't eat fruit, right? Have you ever heard that? Carbs are bad. Let me tell you right now, carbs are not bad. I'll say it again. Carbs are not bad. It's an issue of if they are refined or not. If you're eating a whole piece of fruit, that's great for you. And we're going to be sharing some literature that proves that carbs in and of themselves are not harmful for diabetics. And how do we treat diabetes? What do we do? Well, wonderful. I'm glad to hear diet, but that's not exactly what the typical sort of medical intervention is. What's the medical intervention for diabetes? Yeah, insulin. So when you take insulin, what is that doing? Well, it's going to create a higher concentration of the hormone so you can force more glucose into the cell. However, when you come to your doctor, they diagnose you with diabetes, they put you on insulin, and they say, okay, learn the Canadian Diabetic Association diet and exercise and do this and do that. I'm going to start you on, say, 10 units of regular three times a day, or maybe Lantus or NPH or whatever they're going to put you on. See me in a month. When you come back, they put you on the scale, and you have gained 3 kilos. And your doctor says, aren't you listening to me? Haven't you been working out? Haven't you been? Yes, I've been following the diet. I'm sorry. Well, I got to raise your insulin. So maybe 15 units now, three times a day. Come back in a month. And then you've gained another 4 kilos. Doctor, I don't know what's wrong. I'm doing everything that you're telling me. I'm taking my meds religiously. I'm trying to exercise. I'm trying to eat right. Then they raise your insulin again. What do you think may be happening? Anyone remember what insulin does? It's a what? Growth hormone. Oh no. Could it be that we are frustrating our own efforts in our attempts to treat, quote unquote, diabetes? We are actually enhancing the accumulation of fat. Do you realize that? And when you understand the cause, you realize that insulin is not the cure. Right? Have you ever heard someone say, well, my doctor doubled my insulin and now my diabetes is gone? Does that ever happen? That'd be like saying, well, you know, I got fitted with some new glasses and my nearsightedness is gone. Is my nearsightedness gone? It's only taken care of symptomatically as long as I am wearing the glasses. It's the same thing with diabetes. Insulin does not cure diabetes. Metformin does not cure diabetes. Glipizide and glyburide do not cure diabetes. They manage it, right? But even if you manage it perfectly, you lose 10 years. Do you realize that? That's not what I want for you. I want you to get those 10 years back. I want to get you off your medications. Let's not just treat the symptoms. Let's go for the cure, shall we? So when you consider insulin, insulin is a growth hormone, right? What does it do to those babies in gestational diabetes? Makes them large. What do you think it does to you? It makes you large. Right? It's a growth hormone. That is an undisputed fact of medicine. How easy do you think it is to lose weight on a growth hormone? I mean, we're beating up our patients, but we're putting them on a growth hormone. I mean, you would have to have absolute discipline and just hit it from every side to be able to lose weight while you're on the insulin. Is it possible? Yes. And we're going to be going into some secrets on how to do that, but it's going to be hard. I won't lie to you. The other thing that insulin does is insulin accelerates atherosclerosis. Did you know that? What's the number one cause of death in diabetics? Whoops. Could that be a problem? Another common medication are sulfonylureas. Those are the glipizides and glyburides. Have you heard of that medication? And do you know what those do? Anyone know what those do? They actually stimulate your pancreas to produce more insulin. So they kind of whip the pancreas a little bit. So you crank out, squeeze out a little bit more insulin. And what is that going to do? Well, it's going to help you to force more glucose into the cell. Now, what could be a unpleasant side effect of that? If you, let's say you kick out a bunch of insulin, but you don't eat very much food, what could happen? Yeah, you could get hypoglycemia. You could get low blood sugar. But did you know what's funny is, have any of you heard of black box warnings on medications? Have you ever seen those pharmacy inserts? When you get the medication, there's that little paper that's only like this big, but then you unfold it and you can put it on your wall. Have you ever seen that thing? I read those things. I mean, if you want, if you have insomnia some night, you could also read it too. But I'm going to tell you that there is a black box warning, and you're welcome to look at it. It's on all sulfonylureas by law, lipizide, glyburide, and it's based on the studies they did with tolamazide, which was the first sulfonylurea, first generation. All sulfonylureas have a black box warning. And that black box warning says that it will significantly increase the risk of fatal MI. Did you know that? Now, remind me again what the number one cause of death for diabetics is. Could that be a problem? I think a major problem. This is 100% true. The drugs we use to treat diabetes place you at greater risk for the number one killer that's coming up your alley if you have diabetes. The answer is not drugs. Drugs do not cure the disease. The problem is fat. Fat in your diet and fat in you. The insulin does not take away the fat. You understand? In fact, it's a growth hormone, right? So it's going to actually add to it. Now, granted, there are times to use drugs. I mean, I use insulin all the time in my job. I see a diabetic come in a coma. Their blood sugars are through the roof, you know, 15, 20, 25. I'm going to put them on an insulin drip. But that's not the long-term answer. Does that make sense? Sure, I'm going to put them on the drip till I can get their ketones under control, get the acids clear out of their body, get them rehydrated, stuff like that. But when they get discharged, we need to address the cause. Because when you address the cause, you find the cure. Is there a difference between natural insulin, your own insulin, and the stuff we give you? And I'm not talking about checking a C-peptide for those of you who are health professionals. That's not what I'm talking about. Yes, that is a difference. But there is a difference between insulin that's injected into you and that which the body creates because it is active. Right? I'll give you an example. I have a chef that works for us. He's one of the caretakers for my grandmother. She's turning 89 next month, and she's lived with me for the last 9 years since she was 80. And he has diabetes. And I remember seeing him inject his sliding scale insulin. You know, he'll check his sugar maybe 3 times a day, and there's a little scale. If it's between certain ranges, then he'll take maybe 6 units or 8 units or 4 units or sometimes 10 units. And I said, Tony, do me a favor. He said, sure. What can I do for you? I said, well, this is really for you. How much are you going to inject right now? And he said, 6 units. I said, how's your sugar? He's like, it's not super high, but it's not low. It's kind of in the moderate range. It's moderately high. And I said, before you inject that insulin, go around the block. I'll take care of grandma for an hour. Go for an hour walk and drink a liter of water. Then recheck it. What do you think his sugar was? Normal. Did you know that an hour walking, your body itself will produce the equivalent of about 10 units of regular? 6 to 10, depending on your physiology. You know what the water does for him too? Flushes it out. And that's what he started to do. Instead of grabbing for the insulin, instead of grabbing for the drug, he made tracks. And he began to lose weight. And his doctor told him, I said, you saw your doctor, what'd she say? He's like, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. Because she starts now backing off on his insulin. Because he is taking care of the cause. Initially, he was almost 300 pounds. Now he's lost almost 50 pounds. He is almost rid of his insulin. He's down to just a little bit left. He's in the home stretch. Anyone know what the oldest controlled trial known to man is? Anyone know what a controlled trial is? Anyone? They have the control group, right, which is the standard group, and then they have the experimental group, right? And they try to lock all of the variables. All the variables are the same except for maybe one or two. That's a controlled trial. Anyone know what the oldest controlled trial to man is? I'll give you a hint. It occurred in the kingdom of Babylon in the book of Daniel. Daniel and his three friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, were the experimental group. The control group was the rest. Daniel 1:12, Daniel proposes a study design. He says, give me 10 days on a plant-based diet and water to drink and see what the results are. Now, in 10 days, they were healthier than the control group. In 3 years, they were smarter than the control group. Now, that's very interesting because Daniel, what religion was Daniel? What religion was he? Jewish, right? He was a good Jewish boy, right? So why would he go vegan? Right? Don't you think that's a little extreme, Daniel, right? I mean, he's Jewish, right? According to his laws in the Old Testament, the dietary laws, he would have to avoid unclean meats. But that doesn't mean he didn't have to eat meat, right? He could have still eaten meat. He could have eaten dairy products. He could have eaten eggs. He could have eaten milk, cheese, right? Chicken, fish, right? Clean meats. Why vegan? Where would he have gotten that idea? Anyone know? Well, in the Torah. In the first five books, he had access to the first five books of Moses, and probably the role of Isaiah or Jeremiah was partially completed or something like that. So he had access to the book of Genesis. And the book of Genesis, we read that the original diet given to man was what? Vegan. Did you know it was a plant-based diet? That's where he got his idea, right? But even though he had that idea, do you realize he didn't have to go that far? He could have just said, you know what, I'll have the clean meats and maybe some milk to drink or something like that. He could say, you know, I'll go lacto-ovo for 10 days. Could he not have done that? Sure he could have. Why does he go all the way? Because when you're committed to show change, you go all the way. Daniel knew what the ideal was for man. And he knew that he only had 10 days to prove his point, right? So if you want to see a difference in a study, you create a large contrast. Does that make sense? Because the control group over here is eating like the meats and the whatever. They're drinking wine, right? They got a really rich diet. And now he's going for water and plant foods, right? Fruits, vegetables, grains, beans, nuts. The original diet given to man. I give you the Daniel diet as a challenge. Because when your desire for your cure overcomes your resistance to change, you will have success. But was Daniel the only one who used the vegan diet? No. 2006 study. Neil Barnard, the president of the Physicians Committee on Responsible Medicine, decided to take a look at Daniel's innovative diet and apply it for diabetes. He put it head-to-head against the gold standard. And the gold standard in my country is the ADA diet, the American Diabetic Association diet. Would be the Canadian Diabetic Association diet here. And I find that the most important aspect of this study was that the food was not provided. So what does that mean? That means they just educated people. They ran them through cooking classes. They showed them how to cook vegan. They showed them how to cook ADA and said, go to it. They did not provide them the food. They let them cook for themselves. They went 22 weeks, 50 patients in each group, and the results were miraculous. Now, certainly, did the ADA diet work? Well, sure it does. That's why they use it, right? Was it similar to the Canadian diet? Sure it is. It helped. It definitely helped. A quarter of them were able to reduce their medications. In the vegan group, almost half were able to cut their medications. The vegan group lost 14 pounds. The ADA group lost a little over 6. This is actually what excites me the most about the results, is that the LDL cholesterol went down 21% in the vegan group. Do you know why that excites me for someone who's diabetic? Because for every 1% your LDL drops, your risk for MI or heart attack goes down 2 to 3%. So do you realize this is like a 63% reduction in the number one cause of death for diabetics? That is a huge, huge, huge protective effect for someone with diabetes, because it's striking at your number one risk for death, which is heart attack. Huge reduction in risk, over a half reduction in risk. There was also better glycemic or glucose control in the vegan group. And the funny thing was, is that the vegan group was easier to follow because there was no limit on portion sizes, carbs, or calories. They just said, cook vegan. Well, do I have to restrict this? No. What's a portion? You don't need to know what a portion is. Whereas the other diet, there was all kinds of limits and carbs and calories. The funny thing was, is that the vegan group actually ate more than 50 grams extra carbs per day. And they got better results. They not only had more carbs in the ADA group, they had more carbs than they were eating before. Do carbs cause diabetes? No. No. It's refined carbs that are harmful for you. But if you remember, complex carbohydrates are like whole grains, right? Things like fruits, vegetables, those all contain carbohydrates. But in the whole plant food, it's not going to harm you. Even like a fruit, like you eat a fruit, it may be simple sugars, but you've got the fiber that slows the absorption of those sugars. So it's not going to create a shock to your system like a refined sugar might. Okay, here is the money slide. Secrets to weight loss. Are you ready? Secrets that your doctor perhaps may not have told you, but I'm going to tell you for free. The first is, how many people like apples? How many people like apples? Oh, wow. Are apples pretty reasonable here? Can you grow apples here? No? Sometimes? Okay. So, I am going to propose the apple diet. And it's very simple. Before any meal, the rule is you eat one apple. That's it. End of story. That's the whole thing. It seems very simple, but do you know why it works? Well, the apple is helpful because an apple is no fat, right? It's high fiber, high water, high nutrient content, and it involves a lot of chewing. However, the reason why it works is you eat it first. Therefore, you get a little full so you don't eat as much as the bad stuff that you were going to eat. Does that make sense? Now, I have real-world experience with this. My sister actually tried this when she heard this in one of my lectures, and she lost 20 pounds in just 5 months, just doing the apple diet. She didn't change anything else. The next is we go to the land of the rising sun. We go to Japan, And people, have anyone been to Japan? Anyone here been to Japan? People that are Japanese, are they large people or small people generally? They're small people. However, the sumo wrestlers, although they are Japanese, they have figured out a way to override their genetic code. And I'm going to show you how they do that. The sumo wrestler for breakfast eats nothing. Did you know that? For lunch, they eat a big meal, and what do? Right after they eat lunch, they sleep. Siesta, we call that in Hispanic cultures. The post-lunch coma, right? For dinner, do you know when they eat dinner? Late at night. And they eat at McDonald's. It's true, they do. In fact, people in Japan, they sometimes go to McDonald's not to eat, but to watch the sumo wrestler eat. Because that is when they put away a colossal amount of food. And what do you suppose they do right after dinner? They sleep. Are you noticing any perhaps similarities between the way of the sumo and yumo? Coincidence? I think not. If you don't want to look like the sumo, then don't act like the sumo. Right? So the sumo wrestler is actually able to use lifestyle to overcome his genetic code. Could you perhaps do the same, but in the reverse? If you want to look the opposite of the sumo, then you need to do the opposite. So for breakfast, what are we going to eat? No, yeah, that's right. There you go. I like it. Very good. You're going to start with the apple, but you're going to eat your biggest meal. You're going to eat your biggest meal for breakfast instead of your biggest meal when? No, they eat their biggest meal for dinner. You want to swap that. So instead of eating your biggest meal at night, which is when most of us eat our biggest meal, right? You want to eat your biggest meal in the morning, because if you look at a metabolic curve, when you're sleeping, where is your metabolism? It's low. In fact, it's called the basal metabolic rate. It's the lowest it is ever going to be, right? When you wake up, what do you suppose happens? It goes up, right? And you know what's interesting? If you skip breakfast, it goes back down. If you eat breakfast, you increase your metabolism for the rest of the day by 25%. Eating breakfast does not hurt you. People say, well, I'm cutting back for breakfast because I want to lose weight. That is not the time to cut back. And the reason why is during the morning and the afternoon, your metabolism is high. So if you eat a large amount of calories here, what do you suppose those calories are going to be used for? Energy, right? They're going to be used for activity. So you get a little dip in the afternoon around 3 or 4, and then at night, where do you think your metabolism goes? Down. And then when you sleep, where does it go? Back to basal, right? Now, most of us eat our largest meal when? Dinner time. So if you eat a massive amount of calories here, what do you think your body's going to do with those? Well, it's got nothing to do with it but store, right? So where should you eat the bulk of your calories? Breakfast, right? And for dinner, what should you eat? An apple. I like that. Very good. Excellent. You are learning. Well, if you do eat supper, make it the smallest meal. Does that make sense? Because what are you going to do, right? Most people, they just come home, they flop on the sofa, they might watch TV, right? But they don't really burn a lot of extra calories.
You burn most of your calories here during the day, right? When you're actually active. So dinner, if you're going to skip a meal, which do you think is going to help you lose the most weight? Yeah, if you skip dinner. If you only want to eat two meals a day, and I want you to know that, where is he? Jason Williams? Where is he? He's over, yeah. He actually, his household only eats what? Two meals a day. Yeah. And it works very effectively for not only losing weight, but keeping it off. So if you're going to skip one meal, skip dinner. If you have to eat dinner, have the apple. And maybe something that's low fat, you know, something that's low calorie. Your biggest meal is breakfast. Your next biggest meal is lunch. What's the thing you never want to do right after a meal? Sleep. But what's the temptation? To sleep. The problem is if you eat a meal and you follow it by a basal metabolic rate, what does your body do with all those calories? It stores them, right? Does that make sense? Right? And that's why the sumo gets so large, right? Because we in North America, we follow the sumo lifestyle. We're like sumo nation now. And that's why the majority of us are unfortunately overweight. You wondered why so many of those kids are going to die of diabetes? It's because the rate of childhood obesity is through the roof now in North America. It's absolutely out of control. Kids are like playing their Xbox and, you know, all their game systems instead of going out and playing like they used to, right? They're not getting any exercise. And the food that they eat now, it's just all refined fats and refined sugars. You know what's funny is even breakfast cereals now are deep fried. I'm serious. I've looked at some of the ingredients. They're like partially hydrogenated soybean oil. They're like frying these breakfast cereals and loading them with sugar. It's unreal. Now, certainly eating breakfast is important, right? And I want everyone to know that breakfast is important and you should eat your biggest meal, but quality, right? Eat quality calories. Eat a plant-based diet instead of heavy meats and heavy refined sugars and heavy refined oils, things like that. If you eat whole plant foods, you're never going to go wrong. The other thing is, have any of you ever heard of Atkins, Dr. Atkins? You heard of his diet? He's dead, by the way. He didn't die of the Atkins diet, though. Some people say that he did. They try to be funny about that, but that's just a conspiracy theory. My understanding that he did not die of that. But I want to share with you some of his very preliminary research and where he got his idea for the Atkins diet. A lot of people say calories in, calories out, right? They make an equation. So many calories in, so many calories out. Did you know that that's not true? Not all calories are created equal. There are three main forms of calories. What are they? Fat and carbohydrate and protein, right? There's also alcohol too, but anyway, I'll put that there. But you'll see why that's not a good idea. How many calories per gram in carbohydrate? Does anyone know? How many calories per gram? 4, yeah, who said that? Wow, how did you know that? That's good. So how about protein? 4, yeah, it's the same, 4.1. How about fat? Yes, it is sexy 9.5, but that's all right. I'll give that to you, half credit. 9.5. Anyone know alcohol? If you knew, I would like pass out. It's like 7. So, ever wondered where the beer belly came from? What does alcohol look a lot like? Like fat, doesn't it? Yeah, so don't drink alcohol, please. It's not good for you. There's lots of other reasons, too. Now, when you look at fat, carbohydrate, and protein, let's say one day you overdo it a little bit and you eat more calories than you burn. What is the body going to do with the excess calories? Store it, right? And what is it going to store it as? What's the storage molecule on our bodies? Fat. So it's going to turn into fat. So let's say you eat 100 extra calories of fat. What does that look like? What's 100 calories of fat look like? pat of butter, right? It's pretty simple. It's pretty simple to, instead of buttering your bread like this, to go a little bit extra, right? However, the body's going to take those 100 calories, and it's going to take the 100 calories of butter fat and turn it into your spare tire. But it costs it a little energy. Do you think it costs it a lot of energy to turn fat into fat? How hard do you think that is for the human body? Not too hard. You actually lose only 3 calories, and you're left with what? 97. Let's say you eat 100 extra calories of carbohydrate. What does that look like? Like a piece of bread, right? So an extra piece of bread. You eat 100 extra calories. How easy do you think it is for the body to change carbohydrate into fat? Do you think it's easier than fat into fat or harder? Well, it's logical, right? You actually will lose 21 calories, right? And you're left with 79 calories. Okay, now we come to protein. You eat an extra 100 calories of protein. What does that look like? Half a cup of beans, right? So extra 100 calories of protein. How hard do you think it is for the body to change protein into fat? It's actually very hard. You're going to lose 31 of those calories. You're going to end up with 69 calories to go towards the love handles, right? That aren't so lovely. So where do you think Dr. Atkins wanted to focus in? Protein, right? So he said eat more protein because it's almost impossible to gain weight, at least fat weight, by eating protein. So he put people on a high-protein diet. However, does the Atkins diet work? Yes, it does. It does. But do you know how it works? He gives you a high-protein diet, and what does he eliminate? No, carbs. He eliminates carbs because you can't burn fat without a little bit of carbs. So he drops your carbs to near zero, so you can't burn the fat. And you know what happens? Instead of burning the fat and actually getting the calories from it, it turns into ketones. Did you know that? So you become a mild diabetic. Does a type 1 diabetic lose weight? Yes, they do. But do you think that's a healthy way for them to lose weight? No way. It's because they are like acidic. Their metabolic system is going crazy. That's why if you have someone pee who's on the Atkins diet and you dip their urine for ketones, it will be flaming purple for ketones because that's what's happening. You're not gaining weight because you're not utilizing the fat. You're burning it as acetone, as acetoacetate and beta-hydroxybutyrate, for those of you who want to know what they exactly are. They're just acids. So the Atkins diet works, but it's not good for you. So if we review this, we're not going to take Atkins' approach. If you want to eat a diet that won't make you gain fat, what 2 out of 3 of these groups should you eat from? Protein and carbohydrate. Because if you don't want to be fat, you don't eat a lot of fat, right? That's a good general rule. Now, there are certain fats that are helpful. Even though they have a lot of calories, the plant fats actually push the fat away from your midsection. You can still gain fat and gain weight on plant fats, but it will move it away from your midsection. And what they've found is that when you have the apple-type obesity, that's the worst type of obesity. If you have the pear-shaped, like if you have more weight here on your legs and your kind of hip section, that's less harmful for heart disease, for cancers, things like that. So if you don't want to be fat, then don't eat fat. The last secret was discovered by Dr. Art Uhlein, and he examined an old wives' tale where people were under the impression that they had to chew your food 30 times between each bite, right? He wanted to see if that actually would work. So he videoed people eating, and he said, in both experiments, I want you to eat as much as you need to until you're full. However, the second part of the experiment, there was two rules. You had to use a dessert fork or a teaspoon, in other words, a small utensil. And you know what I'll say? How many of you know how to use chopsticks? Anyone? A few of you. How many of you don't know how to use chopsticks? All of you start using chopsticks. So what's going to happen when you use a small utensil and you're also going to wait 30 seconds between each bite? But the rule was the same. You still had to eat until you were satisfied. But in the second experiment, how much do you think they ate compared to the first time? They ate a lot, not just less. They ate half as many calories. Did you know that? And that's because there's an area in your brain called the hypothalamus that is responsible for satiety. For those of you who want to study it, it's called the leptin pathway. There's a hormone called leptin. And so when you chew, you stimulate that area in the hypothalamus, and it's what signals you to say that you feel full, right? And you taste the food not in your stomach, but in your mouth. But most of us eat too fast, right? So if you try this, you will eat a more appropriate amount of food. Now, even though these four secrets don't involve exercise, I'm going to let you know right now, the ultimate weapon for you to destroy diabetes is going to be exercise. Because when you exercise, what do you think your body's going to produce? It's going to produce its own insulin, right? Because it's burning, right? It's burning the fat in those cells. Those fat globules are getting burned up. And as they get burned up, the cell is going to start putting out more receptors because it needs calories, right? And when it puts out more of those receptors, it's going to be more responsive to the insulin that you're producing. And you will reverse your own diabetes. When you come to the point, when you realize the cause of diabetes is not sugar, but fat. Fat in your diet and fat on you. That you will start to attack that fat. Not only with diet, but with exercise. And most of all, with the decision of your will to get better, not just for today, but forever. Thank you.
You have been listening to a special presentation sponsored by the Bay Roberts Seventh-day Adventist Church. It is our desire, as we share the good news of Jesus Christ with our community, to foster an environment that promotes a holistic approach to living, with appropriate attention to health of body, health of mind, and health of spirit for all. We seek to accomplish this service to our community by providing health, family, and personal spiritual enrichment programs. This congregation of Christian believers meets each Saturday morning for Bible study as well as for praise and worship. If you would like to know more about the Bay Roberts Seventh-day Adventist Church or to find out what other community events are ongoing or upcoming, please visit us on the web at www.bayrobertssda.org. Or if you'd prefer, feel free to write Bay Roberts Seventh-day Adventist Church, P.O. Box 930. Bay Roberts, Newfoundland, A0A1G0. Or reach us by telephone at 709-786-7516. May God richly bless you and yours.